And welcome to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to canceled television shows in the horror, science fiction, and fantasy genre, and I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And tonight's episode of Constantine Season 2 is entitled The Darkness Beneath, and Mr. Seneca has the episode synopsis for us.
Alright, Constantine, Season 1, Episode number 2, official air date, October 31st, 2014.
Oh, it was on Halloween!
It was on Halloween, yeah.
This entire show is good to watch on Halloween, by the way. Binge watch this entire show on Halloween.
Love it. Alright, The Darkness Beneath. John tries to protect residents of a small mining community who are being threatened by a Welsh spirit. A mysterious young woman becomes John's new ally. Dun, dun, dun.
And this new character from the comic books is Zed, played by Angelica Celaya.
I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that name.
No, neither am I.
But she is excellent in this. She's got great chemistry with Constantine, and I think she really plays, even though the character design is clearly nothing like, you know, how Zed is in the comic. You know, Zed in the comic has these white streaks on the sides of her head, and this has nothing to do with that. I think perhaps in this show, how they're portraying Zed is great. It's working for the show. It's just not exactly the character that was in the books. But I'm fine with that.
She was seen at the very end of the last episode, drawing all of the pictures from the comic books.
Yeah, the cover art of Constantine, in the Hellblazer comics.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that you notice, though, in the, you know, last scene on Constantine, you know, when they do the flashback, they don't have any pictures of Liv in the entire flashback.
Correct.
It has nothing to do with her. And it ends with the phrase, "I walk my path alone. Who'd be crazy enough to walk it with me?" And that exact phrase is from Hellblazer's The Dangerous Habits trade paperback. It's like one of the first pages in there where he says that exact same phrase, and it's just after he reveals that he was diagnosed with lung cancer.
Now, for anyone listening who's never seen Angelica in anything, it's mainly because she's been in primarily in Hispanic television shows like El Señora de los Cielos. I completely mispronounced that, but yeah, she's also on Alguna Te Maria for 75 episodes. I mean, she's been in stuff that we do not probably watch.
More than likely.
Yeah, so you can catch her in all that stuff. She's been on Dallas, she was on Castle for an episode, she was on Criminal Minds doing like bit part stuff, and she's got a couple movies coming out. So you can find her in that, but this was like her first American TV series.
And also, in this episode, we don't really get the huge cast of characters. Like, the Chaz is really only in this for, a hot minute. And I don't even think Manny makes an appearance in this episode at all.
Even though his name is in the credits.
He is credited, but he doesn't make an appearance. Maybe there was a scene that they edited out. So this is purely about introducing the character Zed and her precognitive abilities, and it actually spans farther than precognition. Like, she's got precognition, postcognition. She has almost a little bit of connection telepathy with John. She can see in real time certain things that are happening to him. She can touch objects and then get impressions and visions from those objects. So she's got a myriad of different psychic abilities, which pairs her very well with John. And I think for some, like, you know, if we're looking at this on a writer's perspective and that the character Liv was actually supposed to be in this series longer than she was, you know, just for the pilot, I think that she's taking over what was supposed to be Liv's duty as a scryer and psychic. So they really pushed her into this role, and I think it works to balance out and provide what Constantine needs in order to do his work.
Correct. And for your comment about maybe Manny was in a deleted scene, if you pick up the Constantine complete series, I wouldn't exactly call it a box set, considering this is a regular case for a DVD. It just happens to have, you know, multiple slots for discs. There's no deleted scenes on the complete series set. The complete series set special features contains the trailer for Constantine, a 4-minute Constantine on set, the 2014 Comic-Con panel with the Q&A with the cast and creators of all of the Arrowverse shows, Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Constantine. I don't think Supergirl had actually started yet. So Constantine, Arrow, and Flash, and the DC Legends of Tomorrow was getting started just around the same time Constantine was actually ending. So DC Comics Night at Comic-Con 2014 as well. But not a lot of bonus material for the actual show itself. No deleted scenes, no individual interviews, no, like, oh, what would have happened if there had been a season two? Unfortunately, none of that. Shame on you, Warner Brothers.
Yeah, a missed opportunity there, because I would have loved to see some deleted scenes from the show.
Yeah.
The show is just so good.
And now, if you tell me that they're going to put out a Blu-ray of this, like, in another year, containing the Seed episodes from the animated series that is coming out in 2018, I will double-dip and buy that.
So would I.
Yeah, absolutely. I just hope they don't package the Seed episodes onto, like, a box set of, like, Arrow or The Flash. You know what I mean? Because I'm not buying those yet. I'm probably going to wait until those are completed to buy those. So that would be disappointing. Or put it out in its own, like, box, like, little complete episode set.
I would get that, too.
Mm.
So
the episode opens up with the miners, the miner coming home to his wife, and he's kind of a belligerent a-hole. He's pissed off. He's drinking. His wife, like, flinches at his reaction, which means there might be some domestic abuse in there.
I think there are. You know, it's not shown, but she behaves much like an abused spouse.
Correct.
You know, she turns away from him. She, you know, he says, "I want dinner," and she's like, "Oh, it's not ready." And then she just kind of averts her eyes down and just, like, almost as if she's saying in her mind, "Oh, please don't let him come over here. I don't want to come over here." Oh, good, he's leaving.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's not that abuse shown, but you can definitely see that there is this abusive relationship. He is an asshole. So Lannis is his name. He is an asshole. So he just goes to the shower, trying to get cleaned up, and then suddenly, like, you get the shadowy in the background, and as he's standing in the shower, like, the water basically turns into, like, this oil sludge, almost, like.
Oh, that was so gross.
Oh, it's disgusting. At first, you think that it's just all the coal dust actually just being washed off of him, because you see it at the bottom of the shower, but then, no, you see it from the shower head itself, and it comes down. It's, like, gross and nasty, and it looks oily. It's sticking to his skin. And then in an instant, like, that fire catches, and the entire shower burns up, and you hear the screams, and then cut to logo. And this is actually the first episode that we do actually see the Constantine logo, the actual intro, because it wasn't there in for the first episode.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. And one of the things I noticed about the very end of Constantine's logo, which is not represented on the box, the case for the DVD, it's a different type of font. But the episode logo, which is on our Dead TV Podcast Facebook page, it looks like the very tail end of it. I think it's the I or the T. Looks like the Blue Oyster Cult little hook.
Oh, that's the I can talk about that. It's the last I in Constantine, and it has the little almost a slight curve at the bottom.
Correct.
It's actually a bastardized version of the Saturn symbol.
Oh, okay.
So it's the Saturn symbol, but it's been, like, elongated and kind of bastardized. And that, I think, in a nutshell, is a little bit of what Constantine does. Like, his magic is not really from one area of expertise. It's kind of, like, hodgepodge, picked up from here and there, and you can really see that in this episode.
John plays cards and wins a bunch of money from Manny in his little card sharking gambling he does, which is very similar to, like, Sam and Dean Winchester. That's pretty much how they survive, hustling pool and playing cards.
Yeah, yeah, and that's totally consistent with the comic. You know, he is a con man, and bookies won't actually deal with him where they know him, because he always wins. And, you know, they don't want to pay out to him. So I'm glad that they actually showed him just like, this is how he actually earns money. He, you know, divines, and he actually uses capnomancy to, capnomancy is basically divining using smoke. And so since he's a smoker, he actually does divine that way, and he got lottery win and, you know, good stuff for his wallet.
Then he's going to take a case over in Pennsylvania. Now, I thought, and you told me offline that this wasn't the case, I thought maybe he was going to a town that you'd be familiar with since you live in Pennsylvania, but you said it's not real.
It's not real, no. It's Hedgewick, Pennsylvania, and I was trying to find out as doing the research for this episode, I was trying to find out exactly how far away that town was from me because I'm in Philadelphia, and Google Maps says, no. Computer says no, it's not a real town. But there is a lot of coal country in the like mid-Pennsylvania, Lancaster County on through. So there's a lot of coal towns, even the city of Centralia, I think maybe that's how it's pronounced. But it was the town that Silent Hill was actually based on because they've got a coal fire.
Oh, okay.
Ground.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of coal country out near me, but this town, just not one of them.
Now, Zed is dreaming of John Constantine, and I had a question after watching the first six episodes. Have you been dreaming of Matt Ryan as well, Mr. Seneca?
He is dead sexy. But no.
And you get his shirt off later on in this episode too. He's got that dad bod, you know what I mean? He's not like insanely ripped. He doesn't need to be really ripped. He just needs to be kind of toned.
Yeah, no. Constantine the guy was not ripped. Like, he wasn't good in a fight. You know, he's kind of a wiry guy, has some pudge on him, a little bit of muscle. I think the way they portray him in this show is really well, you know. Got the physique, got his attitude, everything. And on his left shoulder, though, he has a triangle tattoo. And I thought that was a little unusual, so I looked up what that might mean. And the triangle, as he has it on his shoulder, if you notice, on one of the tattoos on Constantine's shoulder, his left shoulder, is actually a triangle, an upright triangle. And I thought that was a little unusual to have a triangle tattooed on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did some research, and the symbol is actually the alchemical symbol for fire.
Oh, which and makes sense, considering.
Yeah, considering that it's on his left shoulder, and things on the left side of the body are usually, if you're talking about palm reading, it's usually about having to do with the cards that you were dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that symbol for fire on his left shoulder, it's almost meaning that this was his lot in life, you know, to deal with the fire and to have that constantly be on his back.
Oh, okay.
I thought it's a little interesting finding there.
And he's, again, his nickname is the Hellblazer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The
So Zed actually runs into Constantine.
Tracks him down, stalks him, yeah.
Yeah, stalks him. She like runs and bumps into him, you know, they bump into each other, she drops her, you know, pictures on the ground, and she has this look on her face like, I know you, and this, I'm so shocked that you are now in front of me. Of course, John's playing it off because a con person can know a con person, and she has all the air markings of a con person. So, you know, he takes his pencil and he stabs out his eyes in the picture, and then holds up to the light, and she takes it, she looks up at the light, which is just a distraction, and then he's gone. But she walked away with his wallet. So, in that conversation, he's accusing her of stealing his wallet, yet he doesn't check to see if he has his wallet when he leaves. And that she did. She stole his wallet. And throughout this entire episode, she's doing things and he's doing things in equal balance to kind of scope out the other one, because they don't really know who each other are. It's really cute. Really awesome.
But I was gonna say that when John goes to the pub, I think that every time John drinks that we should have a drink ready for this podcast and take a drink. So starting next week, we will have alcohol ready to take a drink every time John takes a drink.
I will do that.
In two weeks, rather. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then I love John showing his PI skills by doing all this investigating and stuff like that, because this episode is really heavy on John's detective skills as a private investigator, because that's kind of what he is. He's a private investigator into the supernatural and the occult. And the when he goes into the mine, it reminded me a lot of My Bloody Valentine.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Who, on the radio, Dr. Chris Radio Horror Show, I've had stuntman Chris Cornell on the show twice. He plays the miner in the remake of My Bloody Valentine.
Excellent.
Which is actually a really good remake.
I haven't seen the remake, just the original.
Oh my god, you should totally watch the remake. It's really good. Watch it in 3D, too. In 3D, it's fucking amazing.
Nice.
Yeah. Like, there's all the pixaxe being thrown at the screen type of stuff.
Okay, that could be a little cheesy depending on how it's done.
And it stars the actor who plays Dean Winchester from Supernatural as well.
Okay, that's a natural fit. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Have you ever, by the way, crashed a funeral, Mr. Zeneca, like John Constantine does?
I have.
You have?
I have, yes.
Oh my god. What funeral did you crash?
I like to go to old men's funerals.
Oh my god.
And not say a word to anyone. And wear like a bright red dress.
Oh my god. Do you even know who these people are when you crash the funeral?
No, not at all.
Have you done this recently, or is this something you did in your impetuous youth?
Oh, well, much, much more in my youth.
Okay,
sure.
I was going to say.
I actually also, for a very, very short period of time, was working for a Catholic cemetery selling plot sites and gravestones and mausoleum space. So I had a lot of call to be on cemetery property.
Uh-huh.
And I just kind of got used to it, and I enjoy it, so I continue to do it. So I haven't actually gone to a funeral for someone that I didn't really know in about 2 years.
Okay, so when I come to town in August, I'm going to make sure that, like, hopefully that weekend that you're having your, like, little vampire thing, that there's a funeral in town as well, and we will go crash a funeral in the morning before we hit your thing at night.
Yeah, totally.
So did you ever do, what Sasha did in episode one of Kindred in the first episode of our podcast?
I never kissed the corpse, no.
Which wouldn't be, like, too far from right up your alley of things that you're into.
You know, as I said, I've never had any time with a corpse by myself, so I don't really know what in reality I do. But when I would attend these funerals...
In red dress.
In red dress. You know, it was either a short black dress or a long red dress, and I kind of preferred the red dress because I could be more noticeable. And I would never talk to anyone. You know, I'd have, like, I've got a black flat-brimmed hat with a veil on it, so I'd wear that.
Oh, so your face would be covered at least. Okay.
Obscured.
Okay, like, I was going to say, aren't you well-known in Pennsylvania that people would recognize that woman from the funeral in the red dress?
Well, there are so many funerals, and in Philadelphia, there is a major cemetery. It's one of the largest, and it's called Laurel Hill. And it's a beautiful, picturesque cemetery that I just go there to have picnics and whatnot. And occasionally, you know, there's a funeral happening. And so, you could just walk right up and, you know, you give a nod here or there to people. And you watch with respect, you know, if you're not dressed for the funeral itself. And, it's really nice. It's very pleasant. I find cemeteries so peaceful and kind of happy places, even though there's this idea that every time you go to a funeral or at the cemetery, you should be sad and forlorn. And I really just think it's a good celebration of someone's life. So, you know, and then, of course, listening to all the twittering whispers at the funeral of, like, who's that? Oh, my God. was he having an affair?
Oh my god! So you're saying you just go to the funeral to incite controversy for this poor grieving family? Jesus Christ!
It's terrible, but it's fun!
Were you high or drunk when you did this?
No, not at all. I do it stone sober.
Oh my god. Moving on. So John's investigating the funeral, doing his PI skills, without his jacket on, without his signature trench coat on, by the way. And notices the burnt out shower. By the way, what paper does John say he works for?
He says that he works for the Philly Inquirer.
Is that a real paper in Pennsylvania?
I think it's a very, very minor paper.
Okay. So it's so obscure that somebody wouldn't be, like, checking in on it, you know, and, like, yeah, if you said, like, the Philadelphia Times. I don't know. What's the big paper in Pennsylvania?
Well, there's Metro, which is the local paper, and then there's the, I don't know the one that's a step up from that around here.
Okay, like the local paper around here is either like the Boston Globe, the Boston Herald, because this is Massachusetts, or the Telegram Gazette, and of course the Boston Herald is pretty famous because of they were the paper that like tracked down like, you know, like was constantly like writing up about Whitey Bulger, and they wrote about the Boston Strangler, and of course they were the paper that blew the lid off of the Catholic Church pedophile priest scandal. Which became the movie, of course. Spotlight.
I think we've come at this point in the episode. I think we've come to the douchebag moment of the episode.
Oh yes, when the widow turns it like kind of like wants John to be like, my husband's gone.
Well, I don't think he's being douchebag with that moment, because he, you know, rebukes her
advances.
You know, advances.
Yes, yes, yes. He's not a douchebag in that, but I did think that was funny that she was just like, fuck me, John.
Yeah, in all of her mannerisms, she was hot for him.
Yeah.
But I think the douchebag moment was he brings a frozen dinner when everyone else has these casserole dishes and whatnot they're bringing to the widow. He brings a frozen TV dinner and then takes it out of the wrapper and just lays it on the table. It's like, if you're going to bring something that's not really useful to a widow, don't bring anything at all. She doesn't need your frozen TV dinners that will thaw out and then get ruined. And I think that's kind of douchebaggy to do.
Oh my god, yeah. I could not believe that. And then he gets thrown out of the funeral after everyone finds out who he is. And the president of the North Penn Mining Company, is that what the old man says?
Yep, yep. And so he's the big boss guy. The lead owner of the mine. You know, says, "Oh, you're disturbing the widow of one of my miners," and he doesn't really reveal that he is an exorcist or any of that. You know, in this, he's still playing up that he's a journalist, but he backs away and he leaves. You know, but in so doing, like he got what he wanted from the scene. Like he got a little container of some of this black goo. And he took it with him, and he saw this, like, coal handprint on the side of the door frame, so he knows, like, something's up. And he also notices that the widow herself has a coal handprint on her.
Yeah. She says that it's because they live in a coal mine, and there's coal everywhere, which is probably true. It's like living near the beach. There's sand everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But, it's a good excuse, but she... As she's like flirting with John, you know, she reveals, you know, this. Well, why don't you write an article about this Romani woman who was writing letters to someone that this man that wanted to marry her, and he was a head of industry, and she just wasn't told that it was coal, and you know, obviously stating things about her. You know, it's obvious. You know, she's telling the story as if it's about her.
Yeah.
And then John, like, you know, puts down her attempt at
seducing him,
trying to hit on him, yeah. And then she rushes him out in a huff.
John has, when he takes his shirt off, he's got the tattoos along his arms and stuff. What were the other tattoos of that you said you knew what the symbols meant?
Well, the other tattoos on him, I haven't gotten a close enough look at to research. I'm still researching,
Okay.
but I will have those in a later episode.
He forces this nightmare onto Zed, which is like this insanely, intensifying experience for her to basically help trigger her psychic visions and such.
Yeah, by holding on to the goo, she basically gets the experience of being lit on fire, which is also kind of traumatic for her.
I love when John investigates the abandoned church, the Saint Azza, Asaah Church. I didn't quite get.
I don't know how to pronounce that word.
No, neither do I. I don't
Azza?
have a linguist. There's no linguist on this podcast. I have a linguist on my other podcast. And then, of course, he bumps into the two teenagers screwing around in the church. He's like,
Yeah.
"Really? In a church?
In a church.
Like it's
Hey,
something that
you're
he
in
would never
an
do."
abandoned building.
I love the fact that he acts like it's something he would never do.
Oh, he would totally do it. Totally do it. And it's an abandoned building. No one's going in there. These two teenagers, yeah, sure, they're gonna fuck in the church. Was there a question? And I think that particularly, like seeing them get up and putting on their clothes, I think that's kind of the yum moment of the episode. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because John doesn't get any in this episode. You know, it's not
No.
about his love life.
No. In the previous episode, he did not have sex.
No,
No.
I
What's
don't
this?
really think that
Two
makes sense.
episodes in and no John Constantine's torrid romances? What's going on?
They're easing us into it. You know, first they're going with his asshole-ish, dickish behavior, and then maybe they're gonna ease us into, you know, having him wake up and leave someone's apartment in a huff.
It's kind of like they teased Dr. Fate in the first episode, and if there was a season two, we might have gotten Dr. Fate. Maybe Dr. Fate will now show up in like Legends of Tomorrow or something. But in later episodes, we get like Jim Corrigan shows up, aka the Spectre, and other DC, related characters. The mask of Dr. Cy God, what the hell is it? The Medusa mask, which is the mask of of Psycho Pirate, very famous DC villain connected to a lot of things, most notably the Crisis on Infinite Earths, stuff like that. So they tease us with the DC references by like just giving us a hint of Dr. Fate, but in this episode we don't get any other than in Zed's apartment. By the way, there is which John goes to. There's a ton of more comic book artwork. And those are pretty much all covers to like the trade paperbacks of Hellblazer.
Yeah, beautiful cover art lining her apartment. And in this episode, John, you know, does his investigative research and finds that Zed only has a 3-month contract for her lease on this apartment. So she's kind of a transient person, same as John. So they do this dance of like, you know, a little bit of information here and a little bit of information here and a little bit of information here, as to how they actually interact, which is really cool. So John is staying at the honeymoon suite because he finds that the energy is always very good in the honeymoon suite. But after removing the black goo from her hand, he goes to clean up and jumps out the window because she just revealed that she, in her vision, she sees this big cross. He jumps out the window, and then that spurns him to go to the church where, you know, he interrupts the teens.
And he's got the water. You can only see the demon through the water, which is kind of interesting. So he has to keep pouring the water on himself.
Oh, I have some information on this one.
Yeah, what is
Okay.
that? Is that like something from actual like reality lore that, like the reality that you and I live in?
The act itself, like pouring water, running water is actually a very important symbol to a lot of spiritual practices. And what he says is in the Bempa language, which is a Bantu language in Africa, mostly Zambia and the Dominican Republic of the Congo, Tanzania. And the exact phrase that he says is Pelako emeso yobi ilegwa imbon ukuchila penshita. And that actually means, let me get it. Grant me your eyes, ilegua, and let me peer beyond time. So that was actually meant to be a subtitle on the screen, but they didn't actually put it on the screen. So that it's basically trying to the drop of blood in the water, and I believe that is supposed to be holy water. The drop of blood in the holy water poured on him, it's supposed to have him peer through it as a the water itself is a kind of like a tithe or whatnot to Eliqua, which is an African god.
The scene when the bell tolls and they mentioned for whom the bell tolls, when they say that, I actually was just thinking of the Metallica song.
No.
just before the mine explodes and they're worried about like what's gonna happen next, and John gets trapped in the car and covered in the mine soot and water and stuff. It's, again, when he pours out of it, it just looks so gross.
Yeah, that slurry that he's in. Yeah, it's like mud and coal dust and water and oil and disgusting. But that scene with the car, like when he goes back to the mine and he has one of the other heads of the mine, one of the sons of the owner, in the car with him. Just seeing like the water just fill up the car from the inside, really awesome. And then this twisted black hand comes and pulls them underneath the water to try to drown them. And then Zed is actually the one that opens the door and pulls John out. Didn't save the other guy though.
No, unfortunately not.
No regard. He was dead.
One character that we keep bypassing that we only encounter at the bar that has some poetic information here and there, we eventually get to, we find out that is the priest of the town, and he is like this kind of disgruntled priest that was his church that John was in, and he's no longer practicing.
Yeah, his, what is his name?
He's the cobbler, as John
Ellis.
Puts it. Yes.
Ellis, yeah. So, you know, he lost his son in that mine, and so he, the little faith that he has is no longer there. So he's kind of drinking himself into an early grave. And, you know, he had said that you need faith to actually call something. So when they, you know, he was suspect number one for John. So suspect number one is this priest. He's got a real, you know, big interest in actually having that mine closed because of revenge. But in order to actually summon something, you need faith, and he doesn't have it.
You gotta have it's. It kind of reminds me of
faith.
Well, maybe not that song, but it kind of reminds me of Jeremy Dandridge's line to Charlie or Peter Vincent in Fright Night. You gotta have faith in order for that to work on me, Mr. Vincent. I love that. The when John talks about when he's got the witch's broom in his hand, which is kind of interesting, and he's using it to for some summoning, and he's talking about the protector of Earth. I kept thinking about Swamp Thing.
Oh yeah, because Swamp Thing is an elemental.
Oh yeah.
And that was his. That was one of his teachers. So.
Yeah. In fact, Swamp Thing, for anyone listening, is in the Hellblazer Volume 1, The Poison Truth. Swamp Thing actually shows up in the first volume of the new Hellblazer comic book, seeking John Constantine's help.
We find out, though, from the water ritual that he did, that the actual beast that he's trying to fight here is actually the Coblini, Coblinau. And in folklore. This is actually a Welsh folklore regarding mines, and it's otherwise known as Knockers, Tommy Knockers.
Oh yeah, like the Stephen King book.
Yes, and so they're basically, the way they depict them in the show is supposed to be like dead miners. That's not what they are. They're kind of an equivalent of a leprechaun, so they're about less than 2 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
But they wear the miner's garb and they knock on the walls to warn of impending cave-ins. So a little bit different, but I think that the creative, creativeness about this writing staff, if they would have shown 2-foot-tall creatures, it would not have had the same type of emotional pull.
when they finally close the mine, and then later on when John confronts the person behind it all, you know, again, it's you're trying to cram a detective story into 40 minutes of an episode, 44 minutes of an episode. At least I think they did a good job of trying to piece together the person responsible for the misery with the you know, the coal demons, is that's basically what I'm going to call them, the coal demons, revealing it to be the wife. And John uses that word gypsy. Now, isn't that a bad word that we're not supposed to say anymore? Even in television, it's like saying bitch or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, gypsy is definitely a slur, but she calls herself Romani, and Romani is like the more, you know, the actual appropriate term. Gypsy is almost like that calling someone a spick. It's the slur. It's not the actual term for the people.
So that's good. Okay, then that's fine. I just think it's kind of funny when that is said once in a while, because I've said it out loud, like, oh, so like a gypsy, and they're like, shh, no, you can't say that anymore. I'm like, why? And they're like, because it means, blah, 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 and I forget what the explanation was.
Yeah, it's just a slur. You're not supposed to say that.
We gotta be all PC now. But at least that evil bitch gets her comeuppance finally.
John, when they're back at the mine with the owner, and the owner is kind of checking it out with, I guess, his youngest remaining son. I don't know how many of them have been died in this mine. The owner still wants to keep this mine open because he's like, you know, people want to work. You have to respect that. It's like, really? You know, after so many people dying in your mine, you want to keep it open? I know that's your cash cow, but solar's good. Yeah. So when they go back and then you actually see the Koblin-y, you know, fight them, and Zed and Constantine are in the cave with them. Zed draws a triangle on the wall, and it's actually an inverted triangle with a line in the middle, which is actually the alchemical symbol for Earth. And so when John requests them to, like, remember that they're protectors of the Earth, they kind of see that symbol and poof, you know, it's like, oh, yeah. But in the meantime, they still kill the head owner of the mine.
What is it that John says to Zed when he gets back to his hotel room? Which, by the way, is the he gets the honeymoon suite because, you know, he likes the big bed. And the only reason why you get the honeymoon suite.
Yeah. So what does he say back to Zed?
Yeah, what does he say? Because he says it so fast, I couldn't make it out.
Everyone who puts your trust in me dies.
No. Later on, when just before he flops onto the bed, like when he just like flump. He says it so fast, and he says it with his accent that I could barely make it out.
I don't think I caught that one.
Oh, okay. Also, there was a around the time that this was airing, which was October, November, December, and then that was it, because it was only 3 to 4 months that this was on the air. We ran into Thanksgiving, and that year, 2014, Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, Matt, Ryan, and the actress who plays Zed, Angelica, they were at the Thanksgiving Day, Macy's Day Parade, mainly because of the fact that, you know, NBC broadcasts that, and they always pick out their celebrities in the audience. Yeah, it's very cool. I thought that was like, I thought that would be like, oh, awesome promotion for Constantine. Renew it for a second season. No.
I wish the show would get picked up for another season.
Unfortunately, that has been officially been officially put to rest. That is not happening. And we're not living in the age of like DVD sales anymore. Where like. Constant DVD sales of Family Guy got Family Guy picked up again by Fox, and is still currently on the air as of 2003 or 2004 when it went back in there, 2005 or something like that. It was off the air for at least 2 years, but like, you know, everyone was hoping that was going to happen with Firefly, because Firefly sold a ton of DVDs. It was one of the hottest selling DVDs when that box set came out. Unfortunately, that was not enough for Fox to convince it to pick it up again. But we don't live in that age of DVD sales anymore, where like if Constantine sold, that would change Warner Brothers' mind to let the CW pick it up. Unlike Supergirl, though, where they invested so much money into Supergirl, and the CW really wanted to show Supergirl, it's like, well, then why wasn't it on the CW in the first place?
Yeah. one of the things I want to talk about here is when. You know, Zed has that broom, bristles up, and they go to confront the priest because that's, you know, who John thinks is the prime suspect here. He starts doing an incantation. Et separabunt traditionem aliquius et onienis satanae in votis pacta spirituale et animum vincillo et opera satanae. Now, they say that this is from the breastplate of St. Patrick. I looked up the breastplate of St. Patrick. These words are not on there at all. It could be maybe it's a liberty that the show took, but this translation is, and I will sever the transmission of any and all the spiritual things of Satan in the vows, pacts, and the lives of the prisoners and the work of Satan. That is not part of the prayer of St. Patrick on his breastplate. Now, if someone can correct me on this, please, in the comments, please point me in the direction of where I can find this text. So they're calling it one thing. It is clearly not. It is Latin, but from what I see, it was only used in the show. Kind of an interesting factoid for you.
The amount of religious mumbo-jumbo that is spewed out on this show, you do have to question sometimes whether what is real and what is fiction.
Well, that's why we are here, to do some research.
Some massive, massive research, like we're
massive
Indiana
research.
Jones.
I have my dictionary of symbols next to me. I have Latin scripts and occult arcane dictionaries, so I'm fully prepared to go into all the symbology of this show.
And there's more to come as we continue with Constantine for the next several weeks. And I believe there are 13 episodes, as I think last week. You know what's kind of funny is even in the short-lived show or whatever, they do have like a two-part episode that comes up, which we will probably be getting to in probably either May or June, based on our schedule. I thought was kind of funny. That I'm really looking forward to. You said you've watched it up to episode 6 so far, The Rage of Caliban.
Yeah, and I know that, like, this episode had a couple of the spells that he does where you can actually really hear what he's saying. In, like, the pilot episode, most of the spells he was doing were obscured by music or action. So you really couldn't hear a lot of what he was saying specifically, so I couldn't drill down into that, but on future episodes coming up, I will be going into exactly what is he saying, and are these actual legit spells or just stuff that they made up out of Latin.
Gotcha. And then next week, I believe, is the first appearance of Papa Midnight.
Papa Midnight, yes.
John Constantine's Joker, his Lex Luthor, his Skeletor.
You know, they're not allies, they're not really combatants most of the time. They don't like each other,
no.
But they kind of tolerate each other and
they're
kind of keeping score.
Papa Midnight would betray John Constantine in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah. Both of them would to each other.
Yes, and Mr. Zeneca will also have a bit of information about Papa Midnight from the comic books, because I have not read many issues with Papa Midnight in them. I believe he also had his own miniseries, but that's something else that we can look into. And then you can also find out more information about us on the Dead TV Podcast Facebook page, and you can find us on Twitter at ChrisDSAV and on Mr. Zeneca's Twitter
at ElegantlyKinky.
And if you would like to make a donation to the Dead TV Podcast to help keep the podcast afloat with any thing that we need for, go to the Radio of Horror Patreon page and make a donation. You can become a sustaining member of our Patreon, or you could just make a small donation as well and let us know that you did, and we will say your name on the air. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can at thatradiohorror@gmail.com. That's where we will receive any and all mail pertaining to the Dead TV Podcast. And you can find all of our episodes on radiohorror.com as well as on Google Play and iTunes. And thank you once again, Mr. Zeneca, for joining me for this episode of Constantine.
Always a pleasure.
And also thank you to Jesso Lantern for providing our theme song for us. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with the third episode of season 1 of Constantine on the Dead TV Podcast.